you to the Wrestling with Life podcast.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to another episode of Wrestling with Life. If you're new here, my name is Emled. I am your host, and I am so happy that you've tuned in. Wrestling with Life is for anybody who really wants to get out of their own way and wants to grab life by the freaking balls. And so if you get caught up in your own thoughts, your own limiting beliefs, you're in the right place, baby, and you might want to stick around and join the wrestling squad. Today, we have an amazing guest coming on who just happens to be my big sister and one of the people that I look up to the most in my life. My big sister, Jenna, now works and lives in Glacier National Park in Montana, and her life is one big adventure of hiking and grizzly bears and living in the Wild West. Jenna and I have both struggled a little bit with people pleasing in our life and feeling some pressure of societal expectations to have our life look a certain way. And so in this episode, we talk about overcoming that and living a life that's true to you, even when you might not even have the support of your closest people. This is an amazing episode, and I am incredibly proud of Jenna and how vulnerable and honest she was in this episode. So let's get into it. What's up, wrestling fam? I am so excited to introduce you to my best friend and my big sister, Jenna. Hi, Jenna.
Hey.
Guys, I'm so excited. Jenna is on the podcast because she has just been a shining example of giving the middle finger to societal expectations. And the way that she has lived her life has always inspired me to live my life in a way that's true to me. Not necessarily living up to the expectations that society or anybody else in my life has on me. Jenna, I hope you know like how much you have truly impacted my life in that way. I hope you know that.
I'll never get tired of hearing that because I don't know if you know how much that means to me.
I love you. Yeah, I've been someone who I've grown up and cared a lot about trying to like quote unquote make it in the world. Cared about, you know, getting a job that sounded really impressive and making a lot of money and, you know, being quote unquote successful by the world standards. And you're someone who's just really showed me how overrated that is because you're living such a happy, beautiful life that is literally could not be more perfect for you and what you love and your personality. So let's talk about kind of how you grew up and how you got to the point that you're at now. So give me an overview, starting with your childhood. What kind of kid were you? Obviously, we had mom and dad, and then our little brother, Ben, you and me under one roof growing up, a very loving home. But talk me through how you were as a kid and kind of how you evolved over the years into high school.
So starting out as a kid, you know, other than we talk about like the crackhead child thing, which I think all kids, you know, with siblings, you know, in such a happy, loving, confident home, you know, like I felt like a typical kid, you know, active in like church, family, you know, like soccer that, you know, every kid grows up playing t-ball.
Yeah.
Just a pretty, what I would consider a normal kid.
Yeah.
You know, going up to strangers and asking why they're cigaretting and
that story.
I do too.
Not why are you smoking? Why are you cigaretting?
Exactly. And do you want to die?
Which
I think is just
said?
Like, apparently that's what mom and dad kept saying over Christmas. It's like, why are you cigaretting? Don't you know you're going to die?
Do you know what's so funny is like, that's my energy as an adult. And that's your energy as a kid.
Right. And it's complete opposite now. Like you do what makes you happy just anyway. So again, what I would consider like a very normal childhood, mm-hmm. you know, nothing sticks out as anything, you know, until about sixth grade. I was taking, you know, like hours and hours to complete sixth grade homework,
yeah.
which is ridiculous.
Right.
So I know that, you know, mom and dad took me, they talked to my teachers first and then took me to like a therapist to see, you know, what was going on. And so I was initially diagnosed with slight perfectionism and OCD tendencies, mm-hmm. which at the time, like looking back, that's what was going on.
Yeah.
And I remember after therapy, everything seemed to clear up. And then it was about in high school where it started, you know, to surface again.
Okay.
But not the tendencies. There was something else going on that just, I don't think any of us really knew what was going on.
when you say something else was going on, like describe the feelings, like how you were feeling about yourself or what was going through your head at that time.
Just like very shy, you know, socially inward, introverted. Mm-hmm. You know, I walked the hallways, headphones in, head down, really only talked to people, like if I had friends in class or at lunch, just like didn't feel confident.
Yeah.
Yeah, not because of anybody. I just, you know, kind of felt out of place.
Right.
And so I started slipping in my grades started going downhill.
Right.
And obviously that wasn't, you know, that wasn't typical of me, but I always had that underlying fear of asking for help.
Okay.
It was just something that made me anxious, like horribly anxious, like the thought of admitting that I was struggling. Just did not sit well with me. So I instead let myself kind of start to not be the student I should have been.
Right. And that was all throughout high school. And so then as you were heading into college, were you kind of afraid at all about how college would go based on your high school experience?
I think probably subconsciously, but like I can't remember consciously thinking like, crap, it's going to happen again.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to be the student that I want to be.
Right. Okay. So then tell me about how college went.
So my freshman year, my roommate and I became close very quickly. We had a tight group, like a tight knit group of friends. We did everything together, you know, would eat together, go to the mall together, you know, just, I felt like I had a solid friend base.
Yeah.
And then I started, you know, slipping in classes again.
Okay.
And, or, you know, the whole not asking for help thing.
Right.
And when you're going to school for forensic chemistry, that's really not a good way to get your degree.
Yeah, you picked a really easy major there.
I know. Like, I just remember telling people that and the look they would give me. I'm like, I know, but I'm going to do it.
Right. And honestly, Jenna, I believe you could have if your anxiety was taken care of, you know, if you weren't in the mental headspace that you were in at the time.
Right. And I always kind of wonder that too.
Yeah.
But based off of how things have gone and so beautifully, yeah. I don't let myself go there.
Right. Right. But just so you know, you're more than capable of that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You had a lot going on that you hadn't sorted through yet.
Right. Yeah. So then after that year of school, you know, that full freshman year, it turned out that my grades weren't where they needed to be to keep my scholarship. And so, you know, I got the letter saying, you know, hey, if you'll be on probation, if you don't get your grades up, you're going to lose your scholarship. Mm. So my parents at that point encouraged me to take time off. And I was like, nope, I have that societal thing in my head where you go to school, graduate, dream job, get married, you know, white picket fence,
yep.
Kids, dogs, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody had told me that. I don't remember a specific person sitting me down and saying, this is what you have to do to be successful.
Right.
It was just something I let myself believe.
Right. But I mean, think about the culture that we grew up in. How couldn't we arrive at that headspace? Because in all of the movies and television and advertisements, and even just like people in general around us, especially in the small town that we grew up in, that was kind of the dream that was depicted everywhere we looked. Even if it wasn't verbally said to us, like, this is what you have to do to be successful, there were all of the subliminal messages around us that led us to believe that.
Exactly. So then after that year of school, I went and saw somebody and they gave me a personality test.
Okay.
And based off of that test, they gave me a list of like jobs and degrees that people with my similar personality test, you know, went to school for and were actively doing.
Uh-huh.
And so I found speech pathology and I'm like, that sounds great. I would love to do that. So I switched schools and then started speech path.
Okay.
My first year, I remember, went well. Like, I don't remember, like, sure, I might have had a class or two that weren't my best, but it seemed like I was doing better.
Okay.
You know, I was getting involved with campus ministry. While I didn't have that initial friend base that I did, I became involved with the CCO, so the Coalition for Christian Outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a really solid group of people that were you know, my friends, people I could trust,
yeah,
you know, there for me spiritually. So I think that really, really helped.
Yeah.
You know, with everything that was going on.
Right.
And then it wasn't until after that next year that I really started struggling again.
Okay. And then was the conversation kind of the same with mom and dad where they're like, okay, like it's time to try something else?
This time it was more of you need to get out of Beaver County.
Yeah.
Like you need to actually take time off, think about things, figure out like where you want to be, what you want to do without
right.
rushing to things.
Right. Did they ever tell you in hindsight, like what they saw in you that made them encourage you to do that?
Not that I can think of.
It was just kind of like, go ahead.
Like similar patterns.
Yeah.
And so I think they were just, you know, like you just need to like remove yourself from the situation and really think long and hard about it.
Right.
Before, you know, you keep pushing yourself into something that's not supposed to be.
Right. Well, you definitely freaking took their advice because you picked up and you moved across the goddamn country.
And I don't think I tell mom and dad this enough, but that was some of the best advice I have ever been given.
Yeah.
And it scared me at the time because, you know, people in Beaver, they mean well. You know, like some people don't come across as it, but, you know, when they've watched you grow up.
Right. They want the best. You
know,
for
they you. Know. They want what's best for you, even if they don't say it the right way.
right.
But as hard as it was, like leaving you guys, you know, friends, family, even like the town that I like knew like the back of my hand.
Yeah.
Like that was scary. But I also realized how much I needed that, like to get out of that bubble that felt like it was enclosing on me.
Absolutely. So then you decide to move across the country to Yellowstone National Park.
Yes.
And yes. You're working for YPSS, right?
Correct. So yeah, Yellowstone Park Service Stations.
Okay. So tell me about what that experience was like working in the middle of a national park.
It was exciting and nerve-wracking because I remember I had gone through orientation. I get down to Canyon where I was stationed and I walk in. And on a table in the living area said, be careful, there's been a grizzly bear getting into the dumpster, which is like right outside of our housing. No, and I remember sitting there thinking like, what the hell have I done? Like there is a physical warning that there are grizzly bears right outside of our housing. Like talk about culture shock for me.
Yeah, 100%.
And so then it was, you know, getting to know people who are in the same boat as you, you know, their first season.
Yeah.
And then being, you know, mentored by people who have been doing this for, you know, season after season for the last several years.
Yeah.
So it was like a healthy mix of people to help you and then people you were being helped with.
Okay.
So that was super helpful, I think.
Yeah, kind of helped you ease into everything.
Exactly. And then, you know, at work, we had our first name and then the state we were from. You know, on our chests. So, you know, people could come up to you and be like, oh, you're from Pennsylvania. Where are you from? Or if I saw somebody in a Steelers sweatshirt, it'd be like, oh, are you guys from Pittsburgh? Are you just fans? You know, what is it?
Yeah, great conversation starter.
Exactly. So doing that, which I didn't know was going to happen. I thought it was more of a you work and then you go hiking on weekends.
Yeah.
And then you just, but that really helped me to get comfortable with engaging with people, you know, getting out of my shell. Because if somebody says, you know, where in Pennsylvania are you from? You're not just going to sit there and look at them.
You have to answer.
Kind of like stare at them. Yeah. Like it really helped me to be more comfortable just like having, you know, basic conversations.
Right. And I feel like when you have social anxiety, other people starting the conversation with you can probably feel pretty relieving.
Sometimes yes, and then sometimes it's, why are you talking to me?
Leave me alone, please.
It can go both ways.
Yeah.
Because like you said, you're not the one engaging, but then sometimes it's like, whoa, hold up.
Right. But either
like,
way.
Not enough coffee.
Yeah. Talk to me after like two more cups, please.
Exactly.
No, I get that. It's more kind of like it forced you to, even when you didn't want to have conversations, to have them, which ultimately led you to grow.
Yes, 100% yes.
And you quickly fell in love with Yellowstone. So you were originally, you went out there just for a season. It was supposed to be a summer, but then you just kept coming back and back and back.
Yeah. So, you know, you fall in love with hiking. Again, I'm sorry, Mom. I know that's the sore subject. I remember coming home with a sticker that said, I'd rather be hiking. Yeah. And she just looked at me like, are you kidding me? I'm like, I know. I'm sorry. Her, you know, us going from kids to not wanting to go hiking to me choosing hiking, I think was, she's like, who are you?
Yeah. And I'll never forget when you like told her your first hitchhiking story, how you just like hitchhiked in Yellowstone National Park. I think she about damn near had a heart attack when you told her that.
I forgot about that. But yes, I remember she's like, you don't tell your mother these things. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, this is a first for me. I had to share it with you. And then the same thing with our bear sniff story in the backcountry. Yeah. She had the same reaction. Like, you get service for the first time in a couple weeks, and that's what I hear from you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, bears outside your tent, not exactly comforting for your mother to hear.
No, and I get that. But at the time, it's like, I have to let my family know that this happens. Like, yeah. I can't internalize this. And then 5 years later, oh, yeah, by the way, I almost died. I think that's very important as an open family.
Right. So you fell in love with Yellowstone. You knew it was your forever home. And then you met somebody out there.
Yes. My beloved husband, Zach, I met during my second season.
Yes. And you absolutely freaking have to tell the story of how you guys met.
So we had an employee pub. And, you know, after work on weekends, like usually groups of us would go down there and hang out kind of away from the tourists, you know, a way to calm down without, you know, having to drink next to them.
Right.
And there was this really cute guy that would buy me drinks. And at the time I was, you know, becoming more confident, but I wasn't the kind to approach guys.
Right.
You know, like I was still trying to find that balance of, you know, not getting too out of my comfort zone.
Right. We've just started talking to people. So let alone shooting a shot at guys, different story.
Right. Like we're just going to have to take a couple more steps.
Right.
So he would buy me a drink, you know, it would come, I would say thank you. And then we would just kind of look at each other.
Just stare at each other.
And we would. And it was just like, we, like you could tell there was something, but like neither of us were quite comfortable to, you know, like draw that out of each other yet.
Yeah, too nervous.
Way too nervous.
That's so cute.
But maybe like a week or two after that started, there was one night, there was actually a party at the dorm where I was living at the time. And Zach was at this party. And I come around the corner on my dinner break and we lock eyes. And like, I don't know what, but I panicked and ran inside and ate. And like, I felt so, like looking back, I feel so bad, but I was like, I did not know he was going to be here.
Oh my gosh. What was going through your head?
I was excited to see him, but like, I really didn't know like what to do.
Yeah. You're nervous.
I was. I'm like, I only have so much time. Like I want to talk to him. But actually later that night, I went to the employee pub with two of my coworkers and the same thing, you know, he bought me a drink and then eventually I was like, okay, this has been going on longish enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to shoot my shot. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Like, I got to know.
Right.
And so I went up to him and said, hey, we're playing pool. I need a partner. Do you want to play with me? And he goes, sure.
No excitement whatsoever.
I'm sure he was, but it was just like, that's all I needed. Like, I didn't need this elaborate, excited, you know, happiness. It was just him saying yes was enough.
Right.
But I'm like, okay, there is something here more than him just being nice and buying me a drink. But we ended up shutting the bar down that night and then going out and playing ping pong, which was like outside of the bar so you could still be in the building. Mm-hmm. And then he ended up walking me back to like the parking lot of where I lived. And I had heard about his, you know, 160-pound English Mastiff. And I was trying to find a way to spend more time with him without like forcing myself or being too eager and like scaring him. So like he's hugging me goodnight. And I'm like, hey, I heard you have a really cool dog. Do you mind if I come meet her? And he's like, yeah, let's go let you meet her.
That was very well executed on your part, by the way. You got some game, girl.
Which shocks me to this day.
For the right person, you'll bring it out.
Exactly. Yeah. So I go and I meet Sadie, who is less than impressed that I'm there. But we ended up spending the entire night talking. Like, we did not sleep at all.
Yeah.
And if we did, it was for like 5 minutes until we realized, like, oh crap, we fell asleep. But we both had to work. Like, I think I had to be at work at like 6:30 the next morning, and he had to be to work at 7. So I don't think I ever drank so much coffee in my life that day.
Worth it, though.
It was so worth it. It felt so natural from the beginning. Just like this beautiful, like, it didn't feel forced. It just felt like it was supposed to happen that way.
Right. And I feel like when people describe love, that's always the feeling. It's calm. It's safe. It's not forced. It just flows. It's easy. And when you know, you know.
Yeah.
So another thing I want to ask you about too is, obviously, you and Zach have a pretty big age difference. So in society, there's a lot of, I think, controversial opinions around age gap relationships. And I'll be the first to admit, I remember when you first told me about your relationship, my first instinct was to want to protect you. And we didn't know Zach yet. So of course, like, my first thought is just like, I want you to be safe. I want you to be okay. And obviously, fast forward to today, we love Zach. You guys are so cute together and we love your relationship. But it wasn't always easy to, I guess, not choose him, but to have that relationship and maybe worry about what other people thought about it. So I want to hear, like, your thoughts on what that was like to start dating someone who was older.
It was definitely not easy.
Yeah.
I remember coming home after meeting him and having, you know, an understand, like, again, I understand where everybody was coming from.
Yeah.
But having, like, hard conversations with mom and dad at first.
Yeah.
It had to happen. You know, I know Zach has told dad this, like, I would have been concerned had we not had these conversations.
Right.
You know, that you're just, like, letting your daughter, you know, be with whoever she wants. But it was really hard at first because I loved him so deeply,
yeah,
like, instantly. And so then to have, you know, knowing how much he meant to me and how important he was.
Yeah.
But also how important our family is.
Right.
It not convincing, but, like, it definitely took a lot of, like, conversations, you know, and everybody finally meeting him.
Yeah.
For them to realize, you know, there was more to it than what met the eye.
Right, exactly. And, you know, we've had so many conversations since that. It's one of those things, like, I wish I knew then what I know now. And I think it would have been a lot easier if, you know, we could see you guys together and we weren't so far apart across the country, because it's, you know, you're just speculating about someone else at that point when you don't know them. But, you know, I'm so sorry that, you know, I wasn't more supportive in the beginning. All I ever wanted to do was protect you, but I can't imagine, like, how hard that would have been for you to love somebody so deeply and to just know how amazing that, you know, they make you feel and how right it is, and not have everyone else feel that way too. Like, I can imagine that would be incredibly hard.
Yeah, it was pretty difficult. But I will say, you were definitely one of the first ones, I think, that began to come around.
Right. Well, at the end of the day, it's like, I could see how happy you were. And I could also see that not supporting your relationship was only going to hurt our relationship. And at the end of the day, all I care about is you being happy. All I care about is you feeling loved. All I care about is you living a life that you're proud of. And you were doing all of those things. So for me to not be on board would have been idiotic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but again, I know where you guys are coming from, and it was a place of love. Like, I know it was nothing to hurt anybody.
Right. It's always like, hindsight's always 20/20, but I'm so proud of you, for one, because I can't imagine, like, what that was like. And then to be like, to handle it the way you did as well. Like, because for me personally, I am not as good at, like, handling that kind of feedback from other people, especially when I disagree with them. Like, I would have been way more defensive than you were. I would have snapped a lot more. I would have been a lot more angry, and I probably would have held a grudge a lot more than you did. And I think that's just a testament to you and your personality and the way that you love other people. And also, I think there's something to be said for, like, when you're happy and you're living a life that you're proud of and that's true to you, it's a lot easier then to not let other people ruin things for you when they don't agree with what you're doing, per se.
Exactly.
So on that same subject of kind of people pleasing, That's something that you and I have both struggled with a lot at different points in our life. And I know it's something that we're both still working on in some capacities, but the fact that you, you know, live in a national park and you work seasonally and you're able to go on furlough for 4 months and travel the world and do whatever you want to do and, you know, date someone who's a little bit older than you, there's definitely growth that you've done there that allows you to kind of be like, okay, screw you, society. Like, I'm not worried about pleasing people as much as maybe I used to. So how did you get to a place where you stopped living to please others or to live up to societal expectations?
I think a lot of it was seeing like how much I grew after moving to Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Not saying that I would have reverted back to anything, like had I come back to Pennsylvania, you know, like maybe finished school, you know, got some kind of certificate or something.
Yeah.
But I felt, I don't know, like in that sense of like peace, freedom, you know, I was happy. And not that I'm not happy at, like, I don't want that to sound horrible. Like I wasn't happy at home,
right.
But it was a different sense of happy. Like I felt free, you know, it wasn't, you know, people that I've known my entire life, you know, constantly like monitoring things, because unfortunately people are going to do that regardless. But being out here and being away from that, and you know, other people seeing or people hearing about how much I've grown and changed,
yeah,
like that was a lot of it for me. It was like, okay, I will still, in, you know, some ways always probably care what people think.
Yeah,
it has just gotten to the point where like I'm happy, I am at peace. What you think, keep it to yourself. I mean, like, you can still tell me and it might bother me a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't, I'm happy. You know, we have amazing people out here, you know, great friends, great neighbors, great coworkers. Like it just feels like where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. That makes me so happy to hear. And I think that's so true. It's like when you're good with you, like we said before, it makes it a lot easier to be cool with other people not being good with you.
Yes. I think like everybody has a weird way of people, like tendencies of people pleasing.
Yeah.
Like I know, like for mom and dad especially, like I will always have like a fearful respect for them.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're your parents. Like
right.
They take care of you, they support you, you know, they pray for you, they love you unconditionally.
Yeah.
So first, like for them especially, they are people that I will always, you know, want them to be proud of me.
Yeah.
But it's not like a pressure thing. It's like they're my like you guys are my family. You're the ones that have like sacrificed the most for me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
100%. And I relate to it so much because I have the same feeling when it comes to mom and dad. It's like these people are the reason I am where I am today. Like they raised me, supported me, loved me. Like how could I not want to make them proud? You know, it's like a loyalty thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's with the people that you really care about is what you're saying. Like there are times when it's maybe hard to do what's true to you if it rocks the boat with those other people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely get that. So what advice do you have for other people who might be struggling to do what is true to them and live the kind of life that they want to live because they're afraid of the people who they love's reaction?
So I remember when you first sent me this question, I struggled with it. You know, I have thoughts, but I think people really have to work on being confident and honest with yourself.
Okay.
Because if you want something and you feel like it's right for you and it's what's best for you, you have to advocate for yourself.
Yes.
Because like, especially after my first season, you know, again, having those conversations, like, are you going back?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, I'm going back. And I know some people weren't thrilled about that. You know, some were excited, some were like hesitant. Like I thought this was a one season thing.
Yeah.
But again, I saw how much I grew and like, I felt that draw there. And so it was me advocating for myself.
Right.
And, you know, being like honest with myself and confident, like, yeah, I might just go for one more season and then be done. But I know for a fact I need to go back at least one more time.
Yeah, you needed it. And it's almost like trusting your intuition as well. Like, even though other people were giving you advice, you knew in your core, in your heart, what you needed to do, regardless of what they thought.
Yeah,
Yeah. So trust your intuition and advocate for yourself. Those are two top tier pieces of advice right there.
It was like hard to put like that actual advice into words, but like that's what I wrote down, is like confidence and honesty with yourself.
Yeah.
The whole people pleasing thing, like, you know, with friends and family and like other people who care about you. Like if you're not honest with yourself, you can't be honest with them.
No.
And so your platform, like what you're basing that on, is going to crumble if you're not 100% behind it.
Oh, 100%. You said that so incredibly well, because I think so many of us, like, we live our lives in a position of fear almost. Like how can I live in a way that avoids conflict and keeps other people happy with me and doesn't rock the boat? And when you build your life foundation on that, it is incredibly shaky and it sets you up for failure, because who else is living your life except for you? Nobody. Yep. So the moment that you start making decisions out of that place of fear, like, you're dishonoring yourself and you're living for other people.
Exactly.
Hey, you guys, really quick. If you are loving this episode of Wrestling With Life, please go drop me a motherfucking 5-star review wherever you listen. Reviews help the podcast to grow. And when we grow, that allows us to bring on more guests, have more vulnerable conversations, to keep bringing the good energy and the encouragement, and ultimately to put Wrestling With Life into more people's ears. And you know, there's all kinds of crappy content out there that brings people down. I want to do the opposite of that. I want to lift people up, baby. So please go leave me a review wherever you listen. It would mean the world. Now let's get back to the episode. I realize I skipped the part where I asked you to share your quote with me.
Oh, yes.
Do you still want to share it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go for it, sister.
Okay, so it's the book of Psalm, chapter 61, verses 1 through 2. Hear my cry, O God. Listen to my prayer. From the ends of the earth I call to you. I call as my heart grows faint. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I.
I love that. Why did you pick this?
I can't remember when I found this verse, but it's one that, like, in the depths of my anxiety that I really cling to.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, you're looking to God, you know, like, he's our cornerstone. He's our foundation. You know, he's our rock. And so, you know, like, when your heart grows faint, I just imagine, you know, like, you're kind of in despair. You're anxious. You worry about everything.
Yeah.
And like, that's the time, like, you really have to rely on God, because like, he's there. You just have to look.
Yeah. Would you say that your faith is played a big role in you getting through the anxiety that you dealt with?
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause you know, there are several times, you know, since moving to Yellowstone, since moving to Glacier, that there have been like life changing situations that could have happened. And if it wasn't for God, it would have been so much scarier. And just knowing that he had a plan through all of it, because it took me so long to see that he had a plan in, you know, sending me from Pennsylvania to Wyoming to now Montana.
Yeah.
But just knowing that he's always had a hand in it, you know, it's very comforting.
I love that you said that, because I feel very similarly. Like, I look back at my own life, and in all the times where I couldn't understand what God was up to, I couldn't understand what he was doing, why things were happening the way they were, why I felt the way that I felt, there were moments where I was like, where are you, God? Like, what is going on? And now that I look back, I just see him all over the place. He is a beautiful sculptor who was literally orchestrating everything for my good in the end. Every bad thing, every twist and turn that's happened has ultimately happened so that I end up exactly where I am. And I have been blessed abundantly, you know?
100%. And it's so easy at the time, like you said, to wonder where he is.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, with the whole moving to Yellowstone for the first time, like, I had to trust that it was happening the way it was supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But it wasn't easy.
Right.
But again, like you said, looking back, it all worked out exactly the way it was supposed to. You just have to trust the process.
Right. Trust the process. Well, Jenna, I freaking love you so much, and I hope you know how incredibly proud I am of you and the life that you built, and sitting here talking with you and just kind of reliving the years that we've spent together. I just want to say thank you so much for your vulnerability and your honesty and just being so open about the ways that you've struggled. And I think anybody listening to this who's going through a period of anxiety or feeling lost, or, you know, wherever they are, where things aren't feeling 100% and they're feeling shaky, I really think that this is going to bring them a lot of encouragement. So thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love you too.
All right, Jenna, plug yourself. Where can the people find you?
So on Instagram, JLED_13.
JLED, baby. We got JLED on the mic.
I said JLED.
JLED. Go give JLED a follow. You will not regret it. She posts amazing pictures of where she lives now, which is, we didn't even say this. Now you live in Glacier National Park, a freaking beautiful place. I visited you once. It's unreal. You have mountains in your backyard and you're always dropping amazing pics of like moose and bear on the gram.
Oh yeah. You need to come visit me again.
I do need to come visit you again. You need to come visit me. You've never visited me.
No, I have not. I will do that as well.
Yeah, you turd. Shafid.
No, you know it.
All right, I'm ending it there. I love you.
I love you too.
Bye.